Stampede Blue. What we talking about? Indianapolis, AFC South. Stampede Blue, let's air it out. Fly route, let's air it out. Topics, loaded like offense.
Welcome back to another Stampede Blue Colts cast. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm your host, Matt Dainley. Thank you guys for coming back to the show. Happy New Year to all of you out there, Colts fans. Glad to be here for another year, and we are glad that we are here to talk about the Indianapolis Colts making the playoffs, getting that number six seed in the AFC. A big, big surprise, I guess you could say, for a lot of people around in the NFL community to see that the Colts are in this position. I think that a lot of us figured that the Colts could possibly be on the cusp of the playoffs for a considerable amount of time. We didn't really, I don't know that too many people actually thought it was going to happen. So very good news with that. The Colts defeat the Titans 33-17 this past Sunday, making themselves that number six seed, getting into the playoffs and setting up a travel to Houston to play the number three seed Houston Texans in the first round of the AFC playoffs, or in the wild card. So tonight with me is Chris Blystone. Chris, thank you for joining us, my man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we are here to kind of not necessarily recap the Colts win over the Titans, but there was definitely some good in what we saw. I mean, we saw the Colts kind of really explode in their first two possessions of the game, a 12-play drive, a 16-play drive, just completely dominating time of possession. They kind of hit the skids a little bit, you know. Andrew Luck throws that pick six. The Colts end up kind of slowing down a little bit, but the Colts hold on, and it just really wasn't as close, in my opinion, as the score looked to be. So, I mean, was there any major takeaways from that game that you think maybe positive or negative heading into the postseason that the Colts are going to have to deal with?
I think it was a really big positive that Marlon Mack had the kind of game that he did. Despite having that fumble, going into the playoffs and having a 120-ish yard performance from Marlon Mack, that's exactly the kind of thing that the Colts need. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being able to establish the run, especially heading out on the road, they're going to need to be able to be balanced so they don't get caught up in being a one-dimensional offense. That was really nice to see, especially without having Ryan Kelly on the field. So I was impressed that they were able to do that without him being there. And so his return, and it sounds like maybe hopeful at this point, not a lock that he'll be ready to go on Saturday. But if he's able to be back, I think that even improves what they're able to do on the ground.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Colts in general had a much better rushing attack this year than they've had in years past. I mean, they got really good yard per carry numbers out of just about everybody. I mean, Nyheim Hines at one point was in the fives. He dropped down to under like 3.7. Marlon Mack goes for 4.7 on the year, 908 total rushing yards. One of the guys who got the fewest of the carries, I guess you could say, of the three who were expected to kind of interchange there, Jordan Wilkins, only had 60 attempts on the year, but ended up with a 5.6 yard per average carries. And I thought that he did really well, quite honestly. He had some bad games, but we also saw that he is more than capable of breaking some solid runs. We saw Nyheim Hines get a little more physical than we expected. He didn't have the yardage, in fact, that Wilkins did, and he had 25 more carries. So I think that we saw a nice mix where you see Marlon Mack start to show his vision. He gets some explosion. At times he's, you know, with upper body tackles, he's powerful. When they go for his legs, he's like a grandpa. He hits the deck in a hurry. You know, he does not have much it didn't seem like he had a lot of power in his legs, or he's just accepting the fact that he's going down. Something I'm not sure if I like it or dislike it. You know what I mean? It was one of those things like you see that they are tackling him and he just goes limp and he looks like he's soft. And other times you see him hitting people head on and he looks like he's trying to run over them. So there's a little bit of everything with this Colts rushing attack this year. I think that it really complimented Andrew Luck, the offensive line, and obviously helped make, you know, the wide receiver position not seem like such a weakness. And that was something coming into the season that we had, you know, some hopes for KJ Brent. We had some other guys that were in the mix there to see who was going to end up being that sixth receiver or fifth receiver or just whatever. And you know, Zach Pascal got himself a nice amount of receptions this year. I thought that we ended up seeing Ryan Grant kind of fall off after starting out pretty well throughout the season. And when you look at it, I mean, Chester Rogers was the number two wide receiver in terms of receptions this year with 53. And then you go to Ryan Grant, who had 35, which was a little surprising to me. But then look at Dontrell Inman, who was here for only, what, 9 weeks and had almost 30 catches himself. So you see the importance of Dontrell Inman. He's been a big third down contributor, too, for this team. Where do you see this wide receiver crew, like, not where, but how do you see this wide receiver crew kind of helping themselves or helping the offense going into the playoffs? I mean, look, because we're at the Texans. Now, if the Colts win, they're going to travel to Kansas City, the number one seed. This is not going to be, you know, something where you have two wins that you can possibly – the Colts can possibly get easily into the conference championship or anything like that. They are going from a team that they absolutely should beat, in my opinion. They're actually underdogs, I think, in Vegas, but they should absolutely beat Houston. And then they're going to go and they're going to play, you know, basically the hottest of the hot there with the Kansas City Chiefs. And they haven't been a super powerful team. Their defense has been kind of trash throughout most of the season, but their offense is getting all the love in the world, especially when Patrick Mahomes throws 50 touchdowns. So defensively, we've got to look at a couple different teams here. We're looking at first, obviously, at the Texans. How can the Colts and this wide receiver crew balance out the offensive attack with a solid defense in Houston?
One of the things I think they've done really well over the backstretch of this season is they've cut down on drops. You haven't seen the same number of drops from these receivers, the way that they were dropping balls early on in the season. Mm-hmm. And Dontrell Inman's been a great example of that. I don't know that he was really – maybe he's the cure-all of that rather than an example of improvement there. Zach Pascal definitely has improved. But I think that they're doing a good job of securing the catch and actually, you know, getting – I mean, first and foremost, getting the ball. I mean, we've had a couple of these guys who it seems like they were so focused on yards after the catch, which they're not very good at, that they often weren't paying enough attention to watch the ball into their hands, and they're turning up field to go before they actually secure the catch. They're missing these balls that they just shouldn't be missing. Just concentration stuff, and it seems like they've really cut down on that, and that's going to be important because I don't know how well you're going to be able to scheme open receiver. I mean, Reich's done a great job of scheming these guys open. They're not getting hit in traffic all the time.
Right.
These aren't contested catches all the time. That's helpful for a less skilled receiver group. But at some point, you got to think that tightens down a little bit and that they're going to have a little bit of trouble. They're going to have to catch those contested balls. And I think that for the most part, they've done pretty well with that. Now, Eric Ebron has been pretty consistent all season long in the way that he's kind of had some trouble in those contested catches. But as far as the receivers go, I feel like they've really improved there. Maybe I'm forgetting some things that they've done more recently, but I feel like that's kind of dropped off a little from where it was earlier in the season.
Yeah, it has. And it's one of those things that you don't notice because you're not complaining about it. You know what I mean? It's not that
– definitely.
Mean, a couple. I think maybe the one who's been both, you know, at the peak and the absolute bottom at times has been Ebron. You know, he has had so many good catches, so many touchdowns, so many really good catch and runs for a tight end here in this offense. But then he's been one who's had some of the worst concentration issues, and I'm worried that it's going to come at a time of need where the Colts absolutely need him to catch. And I'm worried about his, I guess, third down type viability. Is he a legitimate third down guy now because of kind of the issues that have popped up at different times in different games?
I really just don't think that he is. I think that he's just not the guy you're going to go to on a third down. I think he's the red zone weapon.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously the one run, but I think that, what is he, caught 13 touchdowns or is it 12? I know he has 13 or 14 touchdowns. I can't remember exactly which it was, but only one of his passing touchdowns has been outside the red zone. Mm-hmm. So that's where he's primarily been effective. You know, he's not worrying about moving up field. And I have to think maybe that's deal, is that he just, when he's boxing guys out, when he's going up and getting the ball, he can do it. But if he's got to think about moving upfield, it's like that concentration just isn't there. And he's not as reliable in the middle of the field when you need somebody to make a catch. I think that's where Dontrell Inman has really stepped up. It seems like he's been really valuable in that role. And another guy, and he's had a ton of catches. He's not a receiver, but Nyheim Hines has been great in that role.
Yeah.
And he's a guy who has made some really tough contested catches. He's taken some big hits after catches, and he's not a big guy. So it's been really, I've been really impressed with him as a clutch third down weapon in the passing game.
I have been too. And I was actually talking to my son about it because, you know, they split him out, and he was kind of asking about some of the reasons why they've got him outside so often. And I was just like, well, he's just more of a weapon as opposed to a running back. You know, that's just what they're using him as. And we saw that, you know, that quick screen pass out to the perimeter the other day where he got, I think, in an 18 or 19 yard catch and run. That's the kind of thing that you really want him to be able to do. You want him to get those 10 to 15 yard and anything on top of that, it's just gravy. But he is really been a weapon. And Ebron has caught 13 touchdowns. And you look at him and Hilton, I mean, they've got 230 targets between the two of them. That is insane. 230 of Andrew Luck's, what, 600-some attempts or whatever have been, what did he have, 639. So 250 or 230 of his attempts have gone to those two. And then you look at the way that they've spread it out the rest of the way, it's been completely spread out. I mean, they've had a ton. And next in line, guess who? Nyheim Hines. Nyheim Hines has 81 targets on the season, and he's been a big piece to this team. And, man, I tell you what, after watching him in the preseason and having the catch and the fumbling issues, that was a nice surprise to see him right that ship for sure.
Third most catches by a rookie in Colts history, yeah. Nyheim Hines.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah.
That's insane. I'm going forward. Okay, so let's look at this. We know that Hilton has been battling that ankle injury. We know that we see, I mean, at least you and I are kind of on the same page here in terms of Ebron being not a real super reliable third down option. So what can the Colts do to really make their third downs going forward in the playoffs? Because look, teams are going to scheme hardcore against the Colts, you know, their strengths. They're going to find some weaknesses. They're going to scheme, and they're going to get Ebron shut down. They're going to do everything they can to shut him and Hilton down. And Inman's going to have to be that guy that we're talking about right now in terms of, you know, how can he be a legit third down option in the playoffs and still keep the Colts, you know, with the ability offensively to spread the ball around like they've done all year. I'm a little worried about that in terms of the Hilton injury and the Ebron issues with drops and concentration out of the backfield or I'm sorry, across the field. And I'm just a little worried in that regard. So I hope that Frank Reich has a really, really good week or two, because if the Colts can get past Houston, they're going to have to do this again against a really high-powered offense. They're going to have to match it, and this Colts defense is going to be really at the forefront of this game. These are going to be two games where we kind of see the opposite. Andrew Luck's going to have to throw three touchdowns, and the Colts running game is going to have to be pretty solid to beat Houston. Otherwise, I don't think that the Houston offense is that dangerous for the Colts defense, but if the Colts win and they go to Kansas City, the Colts defense is going to be in the spotlight for the entire game. So this is something that we are going to see games where the Colts offense is featured and the Colts defense is featured. And if they want to do anything in the playoffs in terms of moving into the AFC Championship game, those two aspects of the Colts game is going to have to be at an inordinate level, in my opinion.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And it's going to be really interesting because once we look kind of at this playoff picture, there's not really a situation quite like what the Colts have faced. They've faced a lot of pretty good defenses over the course of this year, mm-hmm. but they haven't really faced really just an all-star offense, right. At least that I can think of. And so going up against somebody like Kansas City, it's really intriguing because I don't know that their defense could do a lot of damage to slow down the Colts. But the question then is, can our offense keep up with their offense? Because I think that that's what it would devolve into pretty quickly. And then also, you know, what kind of a performance do you get from this young defense? Because at their best, this young defense can handle them, I think. I think at the best they've played, if they showed up as the best we've seen from them this year, I think they could shut Kansas City. Shut them down is the wrong term, but they could significantly hamper their ability to execute their game. But I just don't know what version of them you get. I mean, if you could get the best version of them, it's going to be a pretty exciting game. But obviously, got to get through a tough defense in Houston and an offense that, you know, like you said, maybe they aren't as potent. They definitely aren't as potent as they were earlier in the season. Their offensive lines regressed a little bit. Their receiving weapons keep dropping and due to injuries. And, you know, we've done pretty well against running backs. So you got to think that they're probably going to be limited there, but going to be really interesting to see how that kind of plays out.
Right. Well, the Colts, when you look at the combination or the difference between the two games that the Colts played in the Houston Texans this year, they gave up 150 fewer total yards in week 14 than they did in week 4. So that's good. Now you see that the Colts, you know, it seems, I mean, I guess theoretically you could say that the Colts schemed better and were more on top of everything going through. And in all fairness, you know, the Texans had an extra quarter there for yardage too. So with the overtime. But looking at everything involved, okay, they had nearly 350 passing yards. The Colts held them to 226 in the second game. That is something right there that they have to be really cognizant of going up against, you know, I mean, Hopkins is going to be, you know, I saw something the other day that said he didn't have a single drop all year. And that, I mean, does that surprise me? Not so much, but he is a guy who is virtually playing right now as the featured guy in that wide receiver core. They've got a bunch of no-name guys too, and that's something that I think the Colts are going to have to really, really work to shut him down. Do the Colts use Kenny Moore, you think?
I think Pierre Desir followed him the last time, and he did really well against him, but mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, Kenny Moore played out of his mind in the last game, I thought. Yeah. And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they stick with that matchup. I was sort of surprised that Desir followed him and had so much success, but he did really well in back-to-back weeks. Well, maybe it wasn't back-to-back, but, you know, up against tough matchups, Amari Cooper and Hopkins both, that he managed to handle pretty well and followed them quite a bit. And, you know, that's pretty impressive to see. And if I do, and that'd be great, and leaves Kenny open to deal with anybody else. But I don't know. It'd be really interesting. I don't remember if the reason that happened was because Moore was a little up or if they just felt that was a matchup that they could win with this year. But he obviously had some success there with both of those guys.
Absolutely. It'll be fun to watch. So, guys, we're going to take a real quick break here for our ad, and then we'll be right back with more with myself and Chris Blystone. All right, Colts fans, we have a great deal for you. Let me tell you guys about TickPick, this amazing app to buy tickets to any game, concert, or other event. Are you looking for tickets to this week's game and want to know exactly what you're going to pay for those tickets? I do. And if you do too, then TickPick and their amazing and simple app is right up your alley. The TickPick app is extremely easy to use, and best of all, there are absolutely no surprises at checkout. Listen, you find the game, find the seats you want, and you're all set. Think StubHub without any fees. You get the same tickets, same seller, but absolutely zero fees. You save 10 to 15% on every ticket order. And get this, for our listeners, they're offering you an amazing offer of $15 off any single order over $99 through the end of the season. All you have to do is enter SB Colts as your gift code at checkout. This isn't a sign-up only offer either. They went all in for you guys. Not only do I use TickPick, but I approached them and wanted to get the word out on this company because it was so stinking easy, and nobody likes to find the seats they want, then get that smack in the face at checkout of another $35 to $50 in fees being added. I'll never use another ticket app again. It's very user-friendly, and you get the same great tickets with lightning-quick ticket transfers. Remember, that's TickPick, and use the gift code SBColts to save yourself $15 on any order over $99. Go to TickPick and take advantage of this offer today, 100% verified Colts tickets without any fees. All right, folks, we're back. Let's continue looking at the Houston Texans now. Is this a good – okay, looking at the way the Colts finished the season with who they played against, we're looking at a couple games here where they had a kind of a – you know, Dallas was hot and they just kind of smoked the Cowboys. You know, they shut them out. The Giants were hot. They had to come back and win that game. The Tennessee Titans game, you can say it was – well, and even you could start before that with the Texans game in Week 14. That was ultimately a must-win game as well, right? I mean, so the Colts ultimately ran the slate here with four straight wins, all must-win games. I think that benefits them going into the playoffs a little bit more than it might – with the Texans, because I felt like, you know, the Texans, they got beat obviously by the Colts in Week 14. They kind of finished up with a game against an awful offense against the Jaguars. Is that something that we should really pay attention to, Chris, do you think? Or is this just kind of, you know, it all comes down to, it doesn't matter, we're in the playoffs now, and you know, whatever happens, happens.
I mean, Frank Reich mentioned it in his conference today, and he said that, you know, they're essentially – I can't think of the term that he used, but they're essentially conditioned to this way of thinking, this toughened by this mentality that, hey, we've got to win. We've got to go 1-0 this week or we're done. And they've been that way since the Jacksonville game. And because of that, I think that does give you an edge, because that you're not really raising the level of pressure. This team's already, I mean, they've already adjusted to that. They're used to that kind of, we have to win. We've got to go out and take care of business or it's all over. And everybody else is ratcheting. And with the exception of teams like the Ravens that won their way in, everybody else already kind of, they weren't coasting obviously because they still had things to play for, mm-hmm. but everybody kind of had, I mean, the Texans were already in the playoffs, regardless of what happened. They were in. Now they could have lost the home, you know, the home game, and obviously they had the two seed that they technically could have won if things would have dropped the right way for them. But ultimately they were in, and that kind of gives you that moment of maybe a sigh of relief or sort of a relaxing kind of thing. I don't know whether there's anything to that or not, but you know, it's definitely true that the Colts have not had that, and they've been geared up for this, we have to win every week mentality. And so they're ready to go in with that expectation, and maybe that gives them a little bit of an edge.
Yeah, I think it does too, to be honest with you. I think that, look, I've seen arguments on both sides of it. Momentum's not a real thing, but I've heard other people say that they think momentum is everything. I'm one that believes in momentum, not just within the game, but the way that you're playing. I mean, the Colts absolutely have to come in with the right mindset, because we've seen this. I mean, the Colts, I mean, look, you don't win 9 out of your last 10 and not consider that momentum. But the Colts have had games in long stretches here where they haven't started the game quickly. They started this last game in Week 17 really hot and then fell off with some stupid penalties. Anything can happen within a game, you know, to completely turn the tide and completely just, you know, disevolve anything that has been working for you in the past. If the Texans find a hole to really get in and kind of disrupt what the Colts are doing, it could shut the Colts down for long periods of the game. And the Colts cannot have that. The Colts have to have consistency, especially, I mean, this is playoff football. It doesn't really even matter who the hell they're playing. The Colts have to be consistent on both sides of the ball. They've got to continue to take the ball away. They've got to continue to not give away the ball. And look, in the last, what, six games, the Colts have given the ball away, 10 times. And that's something they've got to cut back on. All interceptions aren't created the same. There's no two ways about that. We all understand that. But fumbles, especially in the red zone, interceptions, especially in the end zone or red zone where they, you know, it's a pick six, those are really, really bad, bad issues. The Colts can't have any of that against Houston.
Yeah, this Houston defense is definitely going to be ready to go. And, man, it's frustrating. Like you said, all interceptions, all turnovers aren't created equal. I mean, Luck has thrown some interceptions this season that were absolutely not his fault. I mean, right. There have been some picks that have been on receivers not catching the ball. There have been extenuating circumstances, definitely. There have been some that have been just excellent plays by the defense even. But, you know, this pick that he threw, and I think that's a perfect argument in favor of momentum having an impact, this pick six that he threw was an ugly interception. It was one of those kinds of throws that we would have shaken our head about, you know, a year or two ago, Andrew Luck trying to force it. Mm-hmm. And I remember a play, and you probably do too. I don't even remember when it was, but I remember there was a time he was in mid-sack. He was almost on his butt, and he threw the ball, and it didn't get picked. But it was just one of those things where you just shook your head, and you're like, what? You went to Stanford, dude. You're too smart to do something so stupid. Mm-hmm. And he's had those moments at times, and it's just because he hates to give up on a play, and he's gotten so much better about that. But I think as we've seen the tension sort of ratchet up, maybe that's brought some of those tendencies back to the surface. And hopefully Reich is able to coach that and talk through that stuff and, you know, kind of dial that in a little bit. He's got the defense, he's got the running game that he doesn't have to do at all. So he's going to have to get that in his head. They can't make those kind of mistakes because the offense went flat for a little while after that pick. And they sort of struggled to get back that momentum, and it was because of a completely avoidable mistake. And so then you got the fumble, and you know, all that stuff starts to compound, I feel like. And I'm like you, I'm a believer in momentum. I don't know that it's everything, but I think there's something to be said for kind of getting in your own head when things start going your way and when things stop going your way. And maybe this is a good opportunity to have dealt with that a little bit, be able to address it before a game that, you know, that they have to win and against a defense that's going to be even better than the team they were facing in the Titans. So
right.
Hopefully Reich has a chance to deal with that and they can move forward a little bit more mistake-free.
Absolutely. So let's take this just one step further and consider that the Colts are all the way, what, inside their 5-yard line starting that, or wait, just inside the 10, I think at the like 7-yard line, and they're starting that. Luck, all he really had to do is just kind of step forward, which he's been so good at, climbing the pocket. And just look, if you get a yard, great. If you get a sack, who cares? Or if you know, or if there's no gain. I mean, there really isn't an issue there. You have to protect the ball at all costs at that part of the field. Luck, you could see he knew better. I mean, and that's the thing. He's pumping, and then he throws the ball jumping for some reason. I mean, that's just... He
always a recipe for success.
Right. He knows that is not going to end well. If the Colts somehow take that sack, even if they go 3-and-out, you don't get that end result. They could still, you know, viably go down and score a touchdown, you know, with Blaine Gabbert at quarterback. But what had the Colts defense done to that point? They had completely shut down the Titans offense. And on the other hand, if the Colts are able to string a drive together and at least get to midfield, they completely flip field position. And then again, if they go down and score, that completely blows the Titans out of the game right away on 3 drives. That is the first half, 21-0 more than likely. If the Colts go down and score another touchdown, and that would be it. The Titans can't recover from that. They are not built offensively to do that. We saw that. Defensively, they weren't good enough to stop Luck for any sort of a duration of time. And that's kind of one of the things that I mean with this momentum thing. You have to take advantage. You have the momentum, 14-0. You can't just give it back to another team. And especially you can't do that in the playoffs. And if the Colts win this game in Houston, they do that against Kansas City, they're going to get beat. I don't care if they're up 14-0 or not. They're going to get beat if they give Kansas City even a second chance. So they have to, like you said, Frank Reich not only has to coach this out of Andrew Luck, but he just has to accept, look, you're not getting hit nearly as much, anywhere close to as much as you have. In fact, he has the second lowest sack percentage in the entire NFL this year, or maybe the lowest. I thought it was the second lowest next to Drew Brees. But any way you slice it, look, these crazy OS Andrew Luck throws have been mitigated this year because of the increase in protection that he's gotten. He can't, when he starts getting pressured, all of a sudden fall back into these bad habits. That cannot happen. So we've got a lot of things looking ahead to this game, to the playoffs in general, and the hopes for the Colts to string together a couple wins where you see that there are definitely some things to work on. Now, on the other side of the ball, defensively, the Colts have the same kind of a leader in there, and it's in rookie Darius Leonard. Leads the NFL in tackles, breaks the single-season Colts tackle record. He is a guy who is ultimately, and by all accounts, the perfect draft pick for the Colts in the second round. And he's matched up with Anthony Walker. Those two have great chemistry right now. The Colts defensive line has started to get some pressure on some teams. And there's another caveat to this, especially in this wild card round, is that Deshaun Watson is going to get sacked a bunch by the Colts. This is where I feel anyways. I mean, you look at what they've done in the past two matchups. Deshaun Watson immediately tries to leave the pocket instead of stepping up into the pocket. That gets every quarterback in trouble, even if they're fast. I mean, he's going to do some damage with his feet, but he's also going to get sacked a lot. The Colts have to continue to play like this. Danico Autry has been fantastic in their first two games this year. This is something that we are looking at, and how does this Colts defense kind of ratchet up the pressure again on Deshaun Watson and really take advantage of an opportunity to not only create turnovers, but to create a lot of negative plays?
I think it's going to be really interesting because Tyquan Lewis is not a certainty to go. There was no update officially on his health, but he said he was hopeful that he was going to be able to go. And Frank Reich said they were going to take it day by day. So don't really know what that means. But one thing that's kind of interesting, and I don't know if this wouldn't end up as possibly a better matchup, I wonder if Kamoko Ture might be a really good fit against this offensive line of the Texans, getting some speed into the backfield and flushing Deshaun Watson out of the pocket a little bit. Now, I know that, you know, that doesn't always work out well for teams, but I think that with our fast linebackers, it actually might benefit to be able to kind of flush him out of the pocket a little bit and be able to give Leonard and Walker a little bit of a chance at him, be able to, you know, catch him with some blitzes. I don't remember if there was a lot of blitzing in week 14 when we played. I feel like at that point, that was when Eberflus had started kind of ratcheting that up a little bit and finding it to be pretty effective. But I think, like you said, find some ways to make him uncomfortable. What they really have to improve on, though, is when they start doing that, making sure that on third downs that they're getting off the field, because it seems like they do really well on early downs, and then they let this long pass get through to get a first down on this, you know, third and 11 or whatever, let this long pass go to a tight end and keep the drive going. And that's so frustrating when your defense has played really well for those first couple downs and then to let one go like that. So they just really have to lock that kind of thing down and keep that pressure up on him. Because like you said, he's going to get into sacks. He's going to run himself into some, and the offensive line just isn't going to be able to hold up.
Yeah, absolutely. And for what we're talking about the Colts defense being able to, you know, really have an effect in this game, the Colts defense, okay, they four of their highest number of first downs that they allowed throughout the season. Of those four games, two of them were against the Texans. They had 30 first downs in their first meeting. They had 25 in their second. The two other most that they gave up were 26 to the Eagles and the Patriots. So this offense, it does present a problem. This is not, you know, some weak offense that can't do anything, but you look at who they've lost, and like we talked about, it's got to be Hopkins, who's going to be getting, you know, a lot of the focus of the Colts defense. Lamar Miller looks like he's been pretty solid. Did we get an update on Tyquan Lewis? Is that what you were saying earlier? That wasn't Lewis.
Tyquan Lewis. Yeah, they haven't given any kind of an update. They're going to keep that pretty close to the chest. He said he hoped he could play. They said Reich said he wasn't. We wasn't going to say one way or the other. It was day to day.
Yeah. So. Well, that's good because that means that he's there for the divisional round if the Colts make it. And I mean, as much as you don't want a guy like Tyquan Lewis to be out, I think that he's going to come in much handier in a game against Kansas City. You know, I'm not too worried about him playing this week. Like you mentioned, I think Kamoko Ture is a nice matchup and is a favorable matchup. But he's got, man, I mean, even Al-Kadeen Muhammad's getting more snaps than he is right now. So let's hope that he just has a really productive week of practice and this all comes full circle for him, because that was one of the things they mentioned recently. You know, it's all about how you do in practice, and he's got to be able to do that. We saw a little bit of the Colts kind of, you know, rolling through their rotation up front in the past couple weeks. We saw Grover Stewart get himself a nice couple plays. Like I said earlier about Danico Autry, he was a Texans killer this year so far. So, you know, I want to see more power and continue to see more power from Margus Hunt And I want to see, like, this past week against the Titans, we saw Jabal Sheard play a really unselfish game. I mean, he was taking on a tight end and then smashed the lead blocker in order for the Colts linebackers to be able to get up there and make a tackle for a loss. That has been one of the Colts' best – one of their best qualities defensively is tackles for loss. That has to be a continued thing right now, and they cannot let Lamar Miller run on them. The Colts have been excellent in run defense this year, as we saw with the image that was tweeted out. The Colts have not allowed a 100-yard rusher this year. They've allowed 100 yards, you know, several times this year on the ground, but not a 100-yard rusher, and Lamar Miller can absolutely break that and change that trend if the Colts aren't on their P's and Q's.
Definitely. Well, I mean, he very nearly did it on one play earlier in the season, so he
right.
He definitely has that potential, and the Colts have done a really good job. One of the biggest things for them is they've done a really good job limiting explosive runs, and that's something that, man, the Chuck Pagano Colts let some huge runs destroy them. Mm-hmm. Derrick Henry had a couple, if I recall, as well under Pagano's time of just these gut-wrenching long runs that they'd do a really good job and then just give up something ridiculous. And this defense has not done that. They've had the discipline to kind of limit the damage on some of those, and that's been a big difference maker for this team. And I think if they're going to have success in the playoffs, they've got to do the same thing. They've got to limit those explosive plays. They've got to be gang tackling like they have been, and limiting the opportunity to break off these big runs. They've done a really good job across the board of playing unselfishly, forcing guys inside and giving other teammates an opportunity to clean up the play. So if they keep that up, I think they have a really good shot.
Absolutely. In the first eight games, the Colts gave up six 100-plus yard games, and not against a single – obviously not a single running back, but more. They gave up more than 100 rushing yards in six of their first eight games. In six of their last eight games, they didn't allow a 100-yard rushing game. So they only allow – I mean, even those were only 113 and 112 yards to I believe it was the Dolphins and the Cowboys total. So those are two really good changes. I mean, you have to continue to be a team that stops the run. You've got to be a team that can take kind of the running game out of the equation. And they did that, like, against the Cowboys, for example. They did that by stopping them and getting a lead and forcing them to be one-dimensional through the passing game. The Colts have to be able to do that against the Texans, because if they do, the Colts are going to – I mean, honestly, I think the Colts will blow them out if they can stop their running game. I just don't see a way that Deshaun Watson can put that entire team on his shoulders with their lack of offensive line production, their lack of wide receiver production other than DeAndre Hopkins. And I just don't think that they have enough weapons or enough consistency. And I don't think that Deshaun Hopkins has been fantastic this year to where he's that kind of a quarterback. So I'm excited for this game, man. I mean, is there a specific matchup that you see that you're really keeping your eye on or anything for this game?
The big one, and I think this has got to be on everybody's mind a little bit when you're going to play the Texans in Houston, is to see how T.Y. Hilton's going to match up. Mm-hmm. The cornerbacks for this defense are not great, and they've struggled on the boundaries. And T.Y. Hilton has absolutely eaten them alive this season, and he's eaten them alive. He's averaging 133 yards he's averaged in NRG Stadium in his career, 133 yards and a touchdown a game for his entire career. Seven games at NRG Stadium, that's what he has averaged. That is the highest number of yards for any player in NRG Stadium, including, Andre Johnson, who's had a pretty good career as a Texan. So he absolutely feasts on this Texans environment, whatever it is. I don't know if there's a restaurant he really likes down there or what, but I mean, the guy does really well there, but the guy is hurt. I mean, he's clearly hurting. And I actually saw, I guess, a quote from him where they asked him, did he think that he had 100 yard on that little screen pass that he took off running on? Did he think that he had, this long touchdown? And he said he was almost looking down at his feet, wondering why he wasn't getting separation. Like, why am I not taking off? Because he's not 100%. T.Y. Hilton that we are used to on that play is taking that one to the house. Nobody's going to catch him. He's too fast. And he doesn't have that. Now, I was impressed with his ability to do what he could do then, because by that point in the game, he'd already been limping around quite a bit, and you could tell he was hurting. So I thought getting the, 32 yards or whatever it ended up being was pretty impressive at all. But the what T.Y. Hilton we get, I think, is a big deal. And this is why I think the running game is so important, because I would like to see his usage be limited and start to see him heal up so that he's ready for some of these bigger matches down the, later in the season, or, later in the playoffs, if they can get past that one. So I'd really like to see him put up points early, maybe have Eric Ebron have a really big game and get some production from the other receivers and get the running backs kind of driving the offense early, so that maybe you can limit the amount that you use T.Y. But he's the guy I'm keeping an eye on, because I really want to see how he holds up and if he's able to get any level of healthier.
Yeah, I'm as much as I think that T.Y. I guess I kind of just look at the T.Y. situation against the Texans as it'll take care of itself. I think that he may not have a great game against them, but I don't think, I hope that he doesn't need to, if that makes sense, because I'm looking at two things that, in my opinion, were as much of a reason that the Colts lost the first matchup against the Texans and as much of a reason that they didn't just blow them out in the second matchup. That is the lack of running game. The Colts totaled 91 rushing yards between the two games in their first two matchups. Total rushing yards, 91 for the two games. That is not going to cut it. That is simply not going to cut it. And it wasn't like they threw the ball 300 times. They have to, they did because they got themselves in a situation in the first matchup for sure. But the Colts have to be able to run the ball. Like you said, you want to see them get, I want to see some chunk yardage, positive plays. In those first two drives against the Titans, the Colts only had one negative play and one play for no yardage. Everything else was moving the ball forward. And the Colts have to continue to do that, even if it's 3-4 yards at a time. You're putting Andrew Luck on third down in a 3rd and 4 or less. That has to be the idea, and that has to be something that they are able to execute. The other thing that I'm looking at is the turnovers. The Colts lost the turnover battle throughout the two games, 3-1. They only turned over Houston one time, and the Colts had two really costly turnovers in their first matchup and another one in their second matchup. Turnovers and the running game have to be an absolute constant focus this week. They cannot have stupid plays. They cannot allow their running game to become obsolete in this. They're just no room for that. And if the Colts do, it's going to be a tight one. If the Colts are able to run the ball and they can, and they, have ball control throughout this game, I think the Colts make this I think they run away with it, quite honestly.
Yeah, I agree. And one of the things that'll be interesting, Ryan Kelly didn't play in the last game against the Texans. And right. And in the first game, we had not yet got Anthony Costanzo. So not that that's a totally an excuse, but when you have two guys of that level of talent missing from the line, you're definitely going to see a difference in what they're able to do as far as the running game is concerned. And hopefully, it looks like, obviously they didn't have a practice today. They would have had a walkthrough. They said Ryan Kelly would have been limited in practice, but they did expect if it had been a regular practice, he would have had some level of participation. If he's able to go, then this is a full, healthy offensive line, and that hasn't been the case either game against the Texans. So having that whole unit there, that definitely makes a difference, and we've seen what a difference Ryan Kelly makes in the running game. So if you can get that whole unit, I think that's a big deal, and like you said, had a lot of success. They need to establish that early and, protect the ball. But I think that could be the difference if they're able to get Kelly back and healthy as well as he's played.
Yeah. And, and give credit to Evan Bain. He's done a pretty damn nice job. For coming in and a virtual nobody, as far as everybody else is concerned, nobody knew who he was. But there's another guy on this Colts offensive line that nobody knew anything about this year and would never have been expected to, continue not only to be the starter after Slauson went down, but to really excel. Glowinski had some really bad penalties the other night. Is this, just talk me off the ledge a little bit with him. This is not a where Glowinski, shined so bright, now he is about to completely lose everything that he's been taught and the, everything that he's done already for the team. Tell me that was just an aberration last week.
I think it was. I haven't gone back and watched the film in depth yet on him. I was pretty disappointed, but you know, from some of our conversations and talking to some other people who maybe know line a little bit better than me, they said the penalties were a little bit weak. I never like to get too caught up in the, well, that shouldn't have been a penalty game. I think it was pretty obvious that the penalties were, the penalties on the offensive line have been kind of wimpy. I thought some of the holds, mm-hmm. Just because, sometimes a pancake is, called a hold, and I think that's silly, but, his penalties just took place in such critical times. I mean, he took away a touchdown.
He took
a touchdown off the board that resulted in, the fumble was like three, Marlon Mack's fumble was like three plays after that, that was a swing of like 10 points because it came down and was a field goal for the Titans. So that really sucks. And then I think he took another one away, didn't he?
Yeah, on the touch. There was a touchdown pass, and I can't remember who it was to. But yeah, it took that one away as well. I mean, so
those kinds of penalties. I mean, I think that you expect that to happen every once in a while. It surprised me a little bit, given that there wasn't anybody in particular all that formidable on that defensive line, but with Casey out, I don't know. I don't think that that's something we should expect to happen a ton of. He hasn't had a lot of games like that, honestly.
Right.
And this is, again, another reason. And I tried to explain this, in conversation with a few people. Evan Bame's done a great job, but he is not the starting center. And I think not having that starting guy, even when they do their job really well, they're running communication for the whole line. And so it throws things off not having your field general. The guy who's the leader there is Ryan Kelly. And when he's not on the field, that makes a difference. Mm-hmm. And so if you're a guy who maybe, like Glowinski, isn't the caliber of guy as somebody like, Quentin Nelson, it hurts more when the center is gone, when you're star guy is not there. Again, I don't know that fixes the problem, but I think communication is better across the board. And when you're communicating better, when protections are matched up properly and you kind of know what's going on, you're less likely to hold. You're less likely to do those stupid things that you do when you get beaten because you're not paying attention or because you don't know who you're supposed to have. And then you got to, kind of make up for missing or getting the wrong guy or you're a step, off or whatever it is. So hopefully that negates some of that issue, but also he hasn't had a history of really just doing that. That was his first game back too, so it could have just been some jitters. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, that really affects the chemistry of the entire line with him out. As far as his personal execution, I thought he's done fine, but it really does. You're right. You're very much right that absolutely trickles down to the rest of the guys that are playing. So that's something that Ryan Kelly definitely will make a big impact with his return, hopefully, this week. But, it's almost one of those things again. Yes, I want him to come back, but I'd much rather have him completely healthy and sit out another week. If Evan Bame just gets rocked and looks like crap and plays terrible, then I'll eat those words. But I think he's been, plenty good this year to take on, what we see against the Texans. I mean, they've got a good defense. Don't get me wrong. They've got a really tough front seven, but they haven't done major damage to the Colts in their first two matchups. So I guess I just presume that wouldn't be the case coming into this one. But, another quick stat real quick before we close shop tonight is the Colts red zone efficiency. There are 64 attempts in the red zone this year. They scored touchdowns on 44 of those 64 with a near 70% red zone percentage. Their opponents, 43 attempts, 23 touchdowns, 53.5%. That's something that the Colts have to continue into the playoffs as well. Because, if you wipe the slate, that's a significant difference, in my opinion. Nearly double what their opponents have done in the red zone. The Colts have to continue that quality red zone defense.
Definitely. And I think one of the things that's maybe a concern for me and hope that he's going to be healthy that I think has contributed a lot to that, and maybe I don't know how much credit he does or doesn't get, Clayton Gethers is a guy they really need back. Mm-hmm. Because, he is so good in the run, playing against the run. And, they haven't given up a ton of, they've gotten stops with running backs in the red zone, good running backs. They stuffed Zeke Elliott in the red zone And, you know, these kinds of plays are gut-wrenching to an offense. The Colts have been, how many years have we been on the side where we've run the ball three times from the one and not gotten it in? And we know how deflating that is to not be able to get across the line into the end zone. And so when the Colts can inflict that on somebody else, that is a really impactful thing. And they've been able to do it with regularity. I think getting Gethers back would be a big deal for that, because it just hasn't been the same. One of the things I noticed, apart from, you know, his just absolutely idiotic penalty was, you know, on George Odom, was that he gets sucked in on some of those runs. He gets sucked inside and then stuck because right. He can't get off a block. And Gethers was just doing so well at avoiding that and playing against the run, especially in the red zone. There are so many guys who are doing really well there. But I mean, like you said, it's critical to be able to stop those. Pass coverage really tightens down there, and the zones close in, and we've got some guys who are pretty good with man coverage and can kind of get people off their game a little bit in close. And I think that that's part of the reason why they actually have done well. They're very well suited, I think, as red zone corners. And so that we've just had, you know, solid success and gotten blitzes called at the times they needed to be called. Good calling across the, you know, Eberflus has done really well across the board, and then good execution when they're down there. And like you said, if that continues, I mean, it has to continue for them to find success in the playoffs.
Yeah. And as you bring up Eberflus, did you see that the Browns asked for permission to interview him?
I did. And they apparently also requested permission to interview Nick Sirianni. And I'm hopeful that they're just, I mean, it seems like they're interviewing a ton of people. And I think that the Browns and maybe that I feel like that the, I saw the Bengals listed as possibly interested in Eberflus as well. And I'm hopeful that that is just a, we've heard this guy's name, we want to bring him in. And I'm also kind of hopeful that he really sucks in an interview, because I would really like to see him come back at least another year and have a chance to kind of, to really get things rolling with him. Cause I've been really impressed with what he's doing. I don't wish him, like, legitimately, if he gets a coaching job, I wish him well. And I think he'll do great, but I would really like for him to stick around for another year at least. And that just shows you what this, I mean, and Reich talked about this too. The question came up in his press conference. He said, you can't hide good coaches. And that's definitely been true. These guys have looked great. They've gotten the most out of the talent that they've got. And you can't put this many young guys on the field and not expect that, you know, you're going to need to have really good coaches in place there to make things work. And they've done exactly that. So mm-hmm. I'm not surprised, but man, I mean, I don't want to see him leave. I do hope that he's a terrible interviewer.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I want to see him stay mainly because this is, he was, which we didn't really give it the credit for it then, but he was the perfect hire for not only this defense, but like you said, all these young guys. He's really gotten through to them, and they've done a really, really good job underneath him. And you're seeing the situations where he's able to dial up pressure, and he's intelligently doing it. It's not like he's just throwing blitzes out there just to get some more pressure on the quarterback. He's doing it against teams that it will be executed properly and can work on. And that's something that you see. He kind of picks his spots here and there, and the Colts, while they don't blitz a lot, when they do, they seem to be pretty successful. So I really hope that Eberflus sticks around as well. And it seems like 1 year with him and this defense is not enough. You want to see those two be paired together for at least a few years. And you know, I don't think that he will be atop anybody's head coaching list. Although, you know, teams like the guys right now that are kind of flying under the radar. So I'm sure that he'll get consideration. I just really hope that he is not the guy for anybody, so that the Colts can hang on to him and allow him and Frank Reich to kind of, you know, they seem to really mesh well together in terms of their play calling and what their ideas are for the game and the game plan. And I just think that that chemistry is as important as anything that actually happens on the field. So that's something that I'm hoping we don't get to, we don't get any bad news on, so to speak. So
definitely.
Chris, thank you for joining me tonight, my man. It was good to talk to you again. And, you know, this is going to be an exciting game coming up. So we'll have Some more podcasts up there for you guys this week leading into the Colts wild card matchup with Houston. And it should be an interesting week. There should be a lot of good stuff coming out on the website. And there should be just a lot of fun conversation right now with the Colts actually making it to the playoffs for the first time since 2014. So should be a great week. And hopefully the Colts can win this one. We can do this for another one, man. So, Chris, thanks for joining me. And it was a good time, my man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me again. It's always good.
That's right. Thank you guys for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Make sure that you guys are going to Stampede Blue. Make sure that you guys are using TickPick if you guys are going to get, you know, some playoff tickets. That's, you know, whether it's in Houston or whatever, it doesn't make a difference. Use TickPick. It's going to hook you guys up. So, and as, like I said, make sure you guys are going to Stampede Blue for all your Indianapolis Colts news and analysis. And we will see you guys next time right here on the Colts Cast. Stampede Blue.
Hey everybody, it's Neil Patel, editor-in-chief of The Verge. I host a podcast every week called The Verge Cast with my friends Paul Miller and Dieter Bohn. We've got a rotating cast of characters from our entire site, which is about technology, how it impacts culture, and how that is all a big cycle that causes us to have a wide variety of feelings that you can listen to every Friday. We've done over 300 episodes in the 6 years since The Verge has been around, but you only need to listen to one, the latest one, to get caught up on everything in tech news. Verge Cast is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere else you listen to podcasts. Check it out.